Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this inaugural broadcast of the Opus Advisory Services International Spotlight Trade Finance Podcast. I am Alexander Malaket, President of Opus Advisory Services, and I am delighted to have with me today Mr. David Hanna from SWIFT, based in London, Mr. Eric Lemons, a Global Head of Trade and Supply Chain at RBS in London, and Mr. Markus Folgeschaffen, Head of Global Trade Finance and Services at UniCredit Group in Munich. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you all very much for agreeing to join us at this inaugural podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, what I'd like to do to set the stage for today's discussion is to offer a couple of high-level observations on trade finance and on the state of our business in the context of the international economic system, the global economic crisis to which we are all still subject and still wrestling our way through. One of the things that we note is that trade finance and international trade have been the beneficiaries of a level of profile and attention that is perhaps unprecedented, certainly in the last couple of decades. It's recognized that trade is a critical component of the recovery of the global economy, that it is critical to assuring ongoing growth and prosperity among economies ranging from leading economies such as Germany, which is enjoying export-driven growth and economic robustness, to emerging powers such as China and India and others, and developing economies across the globe that are wrestling with poverty alleviation and leveraging the power of trade to do that at various levels in their economic development strategies. Trade finance itself has often been referred as the oil that lubricates the engine of international commerce. And trade finance, as a subset of international trade, has enjoyed also unprecedented profile among senior political and business leaders across the globe. It is often noted that trade finance is a critical component of international trade and supports, in fact, 80% or more of trade transactions worldwide at any given time. The global crisis brought this very much into focus in that the evaporation of pre-export or pre-shipment finance during the height of the crisis resulted in a reduction of trade flows of over 40% from Asia to Europe and the Americas. As a final comment, small businesses, whether they be based in developing or emerging markets or the most advanced economies on the globe, routinely cite limitations on access to timely and competitively priced financing as the single greatest obstacle to their growth. And it is, again, a known fact that small businesses are critical drivers to economic growth and prosperity. So our intent in this podcast is to create a dialogue at the industry level, both among bankers and trade financiers and corporate executives, and to create a platform to track key trends in our industry and to create a thought leadership environment and platform where senior leaders in this business can exchange ideas and create a dialogue to benefit both our colleagues and our ultimate clients in the corporate environment. So without further ado, permit me to introduce now Mr. David Hanna, Mr. Eric Lemons, and Mr. Markus Folgeschaffen. And David, may I ask you to introduce yourself and SWIFT briefly, please?
Certainly. Thanks, Alexander. Hello, everyone. I'm David Hanna. I'm a senior market manager working for SWIFT. I'm responsible for marketing initiatives in the trade and supply chain business. My primary role today is to work on the commercialization and go-to-market strategy for SWIFT's trade services utility and bank payment obligation, both of which are designed to complement the bank's financial supply chain services.
David, thank you very much and welcome. Eric, would you please introduce yourself and RBS?
Yes, sure, Alex, and good morning, everybody. I'm Eric Lemons, responsible for RBS's global supply chain finance and trade finance business, focusing on supporting our customers to increase the liquidity and the technology needed for them to grow their business and their trade flows.
Thank you, Eric. Welcome as well. Markus, would you please introduce yourself and UniCredit Group?
Sure. Good morning, everybody. I'm Markus Folgeschaffen, Head of Global Trade Finance and Services of UniCredit Group. UniCredit Group being probably the largest bank in the heart of Europe with more than 22 countries being present. My major responsibility is to create a fusion between the traditional well-known products such as letters of credit, guarantees, wholesaling, etc., with the new emerging state-of-the-art products such as supply chain finance.
Marcus, thank you very much and welcome. And indeed, you bring to light a reality in our industry that, in fact, while there have been established products literally in use for several hundreds of years, the level of innovation and innovative thinking in trade finance over the last 2 to 4 years has shown significant momentum. And you've identified a number of areas which we will explore over coming episodes on the Opus podcast. So thank you very much as well. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just as a brief overview of the episode, what we propose to do today, and we're in mid-December 2010, is to have a brief discussion of the Cybos event that took place in Amsterdam this past October. This is one of the leading industry events in the trade finance and broader financial sector business, and David will lead us through that discussion. We'll share some highlights with you of that conference, and then we'll have some observations on trade finance, both at the industry level and just in terms of some key trends that we're all observing, more on our roundtable format. And then we'll complete the episode sharing with you a key resource that we think would be of use or of importance or of interest to you as people interested in trade finance, as well as sharing an insight that we also think is timely in terms of the business of financing international trade. So at this moment, David, may I turn it over to you to introduce to us SWIFT and the Cybos event, please.
Thank you, Alexander. Okay, well, just in case there are any listeners out there who may not know exactly what SWIFT is, SWIFT is the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication. It's a member-owned cooperative. We've got more than 9,000 entities, including banking organizations, securities institutions, corporate customers connected to SWIFT across 200 countries. I would say that SWIFT's role in the financial community is primarily twofold. The first one is to provide a standardized communications platform that allows our customers to connect and exchange financial information securely and reliably. And, of course, SWIFT exchanges many millions of standardized financial messages every day on behalf of our members. And the second one, really, is to act as a catalyst that brings the financial community together to work collaboratively in order to shape market practices, define new standards, and consider new solutions to issues of mutual interest. So then what is Cybos? Cybos is arguably something that I think each one of us has to experience at first hand in order to appreciate fully the scale and the impact and the value that it brings. Once a year, SWIFT convenes Cybos in order to bring together for one whole week in one place all of the major stakeholders in the financial industry and to facilitate a unique forum to meet, discuss, learn, do business, and keep in touch with all the latest thinking and developments in our industry. And the basic organization of Cybos is similar to that of other events in that it combines a conference with an exhibition. But one of the things that makes Cybos stand out, I think, is its sheer scale. And in this year's Cybos in Amsterdam, that was the biggest Cybos in its 32-year history. We had a record number of participants, 9,000 participants, record number of exhibitors, more than 200, and record levels of media coverage as well, including live television on CNBC. I'm told there were more than 80,000 references on Google. We had an infinite number of tweets, which was a new feature this year. And, of course, one of the big things this year was about recovery, and perhaps the biggest positive to come out of Cybos this year was that genuine sense of recovery, that business is on the way back up. As one commentator observed, the Cybos buzz is back. And I think that just about summed up the event this year.
Thank you very much, David. And if I'm not mistaken, the trade finance contingent was extremely well represented in Amsterdam this year as well.
Indeed. Not only was this the biggest Cybos ever, it was easily the biggest Cybos for trade. Of the 9,000 delegates registered, we had 1,300 who indicated trade as their primary area of interest. That's about 15% of attendees compared to around 6 or 7% in previous years. So there's no doubt that trade is moving up the agenda and gaining a lot of attention these days. And Cybos, I think, had an agenda to reflect that with a whole host of panel debates, auditorium sessions, corporate classrooms, case studies, interactive workshops, all focusing on the hottest topics in trade.
Thank you, David. I'll come back to you in a moment to share what I'm sure will be a couple of among many highlights that you probably have experienced. I mean, I know that you were very closely involved in the planning and execution of the event yourself. For the moment, may I turn over to you, Marcus? I know you were there with the UniCredit team to share a couple of the highlights that you observed while you were in Amsterdam, please.
Sure. Actually, I was personally very impressed by the fact that there is a clear move from competition among banks to collaboration. The aftermath of the financial crisis was a catalyst to trade finance, to the necessity that we have to unleash as much as working capital as possible along the supply chain of our customers. This is always to be stressed. It's not a banking business. It's a pure customer, corporate customer business. The question is, how can we support and help our corporate customers to accelerate the order-to-cash cycles? And here, the consciousness of our colleagues amongst the globe is very evident and clear that no one, no single bank in the world can provide equal services in all geographies where corporate customers are being active. So it's a clear tendency that we have to collaborate, that we have to combine technology, know-how, and first of all, network access to the major participants in the value chain, being it buyers or suppliers. Onboarding is critical, combination is critical. So there is a clear evidence that the collaboration is key, especially not to forget, considering also the imminent threat coming from the regulators in Basel II and Basel III, there has to be one common voice of the industry saying that if trade is important for world's recovery, then we have to support it, but the regulators have to support us, that we are able to support our customers.
Marcus, thank you very much for those remarks, and you've hit on a number of critical issues that we've been dealing with in the industry, and you know, I refer to both the collaboration dynamic and the Basel II and Basel III regulatory context, which we've been wrestling for some time, and we'll come back to both of those themes, I suspect, in the roundtable discussion. But thank you for the moment for sharing those highlights of your Sibos experience. By the way, I'm delighted to mention that we'll be looking forward to welcoming everybody to Toronto, Canada next year for the Sibos event. So I expect that having had Amsterdam set the bar where it was set, I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do here in Canada when we welcome the world to join us here. Eric, may I turn it over to you now to share your thoughts and observations around Sibos and from RBS's perspective?
Okay, from RBS's perspective, key on our agenda is to help our customers grow their business on a global and regional basis. Also, through the discussions that were held at RBS, a number of the highlights came up in terms of opportunities and challenges. Very clearly, our customers are looking for new funding, for new sources of funding that they previously did not have access to, and through ways that previously have not been tried. Therefore, trade finance and supply chain finance have become more relevant for our customers, though we have to realize that oftentimes lead times are challenging for our customers and also for ourselves. In terms of facilities, we have started to offer more facilities to our customers than they have been able to use, which is also affected or caused by the direction of the global trade. So facilities has probably grown faster than the capacity or the need from our customers to further pick up on those facilities. A number of issues that need to be addressed going forward to further support the customers are indeed the speed of all onboarding, which is a complex and time-consuming procedure. Therefore, I think it is important to not only have the right resources internally in the banks that organize these structures, but also in cooperation amongst banks that to cover more geographies and to reach further out into suppliers in countries even where we would not be present. Although a company like RBS has a presence in almost 40 countries covering about 80% of the globe's GDP, there's always countries where our customers want to do business and where we might not have the reach, so we will be working with partnerships in those countries. I think it was also very evident at Cybos that the combination of risk appetite, technology, and globality will be very important for all our customers in order to support them in this chain. And I also recognize the discussions on the regulators on Basel II and III. Though all of us want to support our customers and their chain more and more, we have to operate within the margins and within the boundaries that are given by regulators. And hopefully those allow us to also do what governments and customers and stakeholders want us to do.
Eric, thank you for those remarks. In fact, I was very interested, if I understood the one comment correctly, in your observation that the facilities that RBS is beginning to make available are growing faster than the ability of your customers to take up those facilities. That's, I think, an encouraging remark, because clearly the absence or the evaporation of trade finance was a serious concern both for the industry and clearly for the end clients, which we all serve. And in fact, it's one of the drivers for the increasing involvement of international financial institutions and ECAs, or export credit agencies, in filling what's often referred to as a market gap from the perspective of bankers and trade financiers. And so to hear a banker in the position that you're in with RBS make that remark, I think, is a very encouraging development. Gentlemen, thank you for your remarks around Cybos. We're going to lead into momentarily a bit of a round table and a kind of an observations on trade finance and the state of trade in a moment. But if I may, I'd like to share just one or two observations from my perspective, having attended Cybos in Amsterdam this year. There are a number of aspects of the event that were quite striking. I mean, the sheer scale of it, David, as you mentioned a moment ago, and the sheer logistics of organizing something like this with such breadth, the degree to which a variety of themes are dealt with and addressed in an event like this. Certainly, supply chain finance has gotten a lot of attention in the context of this event. Certainly a number of the initiatives at SWIFT, such as the evolution of the bank payment obligation and the trade services utility, and SWIFT's involvement in that collaborative slash competitive space has garnered a lot of attention. And then from my perspective, certainly the discussion around the regulatory context and the BIS, the capital adequacy requirements and so on, were central to the event for a variety of reasons, not least the fact that certainly in one of the interactive events, we saw very clearly that the interpretation of the rules and the application of the regulations varies significantly among even very senior and very expert executives in the trade finance business. One session in particular highlighted the reality that there's such a variance in the understanding of those rules and in the way those things are applied to the business of trade finance that they can significantly impact the way capital is applied to that business. And the implications of that extend far beyond the banks themselves and quite directly to the end clients that are being served by trade financiers across the globe. So I think that's an issue that we will have to continue to track and discuss, and certainly agree with the remark about having a unified and organized voice for the industry to address the issues around regulatory concerns related to trade finance and the BIS and Basel 2 and 3. Now, if I might position the roundtable discussion, I think what would be ideal is if we were able to highlight a couple of themes in the industry, a couple of key trends that we think are critical at the moment, and then just kind of open up the floor a little bit for some interactive discussion. And, you know, we discussed some possible themes around availability of trade finance, which, as I said, we heard a moment ago, is becoming a little bit more apparent, I guess, or just the financing becoming more available. The state of pricing around trade financing, the issue of risk mitigation and risk appetite, and certainly the any market demands that you're all observing. And I think I'd like to also specifically highlight SWIFT's move from being a bank-centric organization to servicing corporate end clients. And perhaps, David, I could ask you to get us started for the roundtable in terms of positioning SWIFT's involvement with the corporate side of the table.
Okay. Thank you, Alexander. Certainly, traditionally, SWIFT's user base has been dominated by the financial sector. The majority of institutions that are members and users of SWIFT are financial institutions, as I mentioned earlier, but we do have a growing community of corporate users who are using SWIFT for corporate access to their various financial institutions on the basis that the majority of
large and even medium-sized corporates are multi-banked, and therefore they find SWIFT convenient as a single delivery channel to access those banks. And we have extended the range of messages to our corporate users now to encompass not only payments and cash management-related messaging, but also corporate-to-bank messaging for trade services. So this is an extended use of the bank-to-bank messages that we traditionally use for letters of credit, for example, can also be used now by corporate customers.
An important development in the industry. Thank you very much, David. Marcus, could you share with us one or two themes as you look at your remit in terms of trade finance and the market that you serve? And I know UniCredit's clearly very active in Europe, as you mentioned. I think there's a strategic focus on Central Eastern Europe as well as a number of other markets. Would you share with us a couple of key observations that you note in the market today?
Sure. There's a clear increase of supply chain finance programs, not only in the key exporting markets such as Germany, Italy, Austria, UK, of course, Spain traditionally, but especially in CE. We have implemented successfully two programs in two different geographies, pilot programs, one in Hungary, second one in Turkey. It's very impressive to see that this is a global tendency that all buying and selling corporate customers, which are at the same time always on the opposite side as well, so a buyer is also a seller, they are very conscious, and the consciousness is increasing that working capital is key, and they have recognized that banks, trade finance, supply chain finance banks can be of service to them and bring real value to the table. But, and this is very, very important for me, it's not sufficient that just banks collaborate. We have to give access, easy access to new investors, and the good news is, from a technical perspective, possible, and it's also very encouraging that there is an increasing interest, I would even call it a tremendous increase of interest from non-bank risk participants, so mutual funds, ECAs, governments, and risk insurers.
Indeed, that is good news. In fact, you know, if I take a step back, Marcus, from my experience, both in the banking environment years ago and certainly as a consultant, one of the things that is striking is the level of awareness about trade finance that is increasing within financial institutions themselves. So in all but the most active trade finance banks, the business of trade finance has generally been very poorly understood, generally not very well championed within those institutions. And at least from my perspective, we're certainly seeing greater focus on championing the business of trade finance within the broader financial institutions, within global transaction banking businesses that are being organized almost across the globe without exception. So I really appreciate your remarks and observations in terms of increasing the pool of investors and having that interest in trade finance broaden itself out beyond traditional providers. So I think that's another critical trend to watch in the business today. Eric, would you share with us a couple of thoughts from RBS's perspective in terms of some key trends that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, Alexander. And I think historically, or in at least in the last decade or so, in trade finance and supply chain finance, we have been focusing a lot on connecting emerging markets with the developed economies, which I guess makes a lot of sense in terms of added value for customers. Emerging markets, I think, the trade between emerging and developed economies has been growing very significantly, I think from about 23% at the beginning of the decade to about almost 40% where it's estimated to end up this year. So these are very significant growth numbers, and the cash flows that are needed to actually support that growth are incredibly significant and cannot be provided only with the traditional way of bank balance sheet providing. Therefore, I think there is a lot of space for ourselves to support, for all of us on the phone, to support our customers conducting business in those areas. In addition to the emerging market opportunity, I also see a lot of opportunities within developed markets themselves and within emerging markets themselves, and the domestic opportunity that is growing also more than we expected in the past. This has also led, in our case, to historically seeing more programs in Turkey, Russia, and also recently in China, to focus, which used to be emerging markets, connecting them with the developed economies. We're now seeing more interest of our customers to develop domestic transactions in some of those countries, since many of the suppliers are coming locally, specifically in markets where the consumer spending power is increasing significantly at this stage, hence a bigger opportunity in many of the Asian countries and in some of the European countries to do domestic programs as well. And the support of those programs, I feel, and specifically when it's cross-border, when it's long distance, it depends a lot on the strength of technology and bringing different technologies together. I feel it's very crucial for our customers to have an end-to-end solution being offered by their providers, whether that is with own technology or with a combination of technologies, but as much as possible, straight-through processing will become the objective there.
And in fact, thank you for those remarks. And in fact, if I bring back your and Marcus's observations and David's within the context of SWIFT, the notion of collaboration becomes critical as we talk about these extended supply chains and the changing sourcing patterns that we're observing across the globe. So that collaborative model, both in terms of enabling technologies and global reach and transactional expertise, even risk-sharing solutions that are out there that are gaining some focus, that whole collaboration discussion becomes critical in those contexts. I would also echo your thoughts, Eric, around the importance of trade and trade finance in developing and emerging markets. Certainly from a poverty reduction and alleviation perspective, there's a lot of attention being placed on trade finance as an enabler of progressive economic growth and prosperity initiatives and so on, both at the policy level in the public sector and at the commercial level in terms of engaging private sector participants. So I think all of those remarks tie in very nicely together. Well, gentlemen, you've all been kind enough to agree to spend some time with us today, and I really want to respect the time that you've committed to. We have, I think, just enough time to do what we promised at the outset, which is to share quickly, if we could, one key resource and one insight that we think would be of interest and of importance to our audience. So if I could perhaps start with Marcus on that one. One resource and one insight from you, please.
Frankly speaking, I'm not sure what exactly I could bring to the table what has not been said in this podcast so far. I would just like to repeat again the importance of collaboration. I see that trade finance issues are picking up. There are new kids on the block, if I may say so. Banks that haven't been in trade finance so far, and they are coming back. Volumes are increasing, prices are reducing, which is good for world trade, but we have to be careful and watch out that it remains the same development. Otherwise, if we go into dumping behaviors, this is no good, and this might have pre-crisis characteristics, which we definitely have to avoid.
Thank you very much, Marcus. David, one resource and one insight, please.
Okay, I'm going to start with my insight. We've been listening here about a lot of remarks to do with collaboration. Of course, collaboration is very much at the heart of what SWIFT is doing with the TSU and the BPO. And BPO is something that we haven't really talked about too much on this conversation so far. Just let me say a brief word, if I may. I think the timing of CyBOS this year was quite fortunate insofar as the Bank of Montreal just at that time issued the first live cross-border bank payment obligations in favor of another bank, the Bank of China. And the Bank of China similarly became the first bank to provide finance to the Chinese exporter backed by the BPO. So this was a world first. I think it's if it's not overstating the case too much, it's a moment in history. It may be the moment that we come to look back upon in time as when the modernization of international trade finance truly began. And I've been using this term trade in the 21st century for some time now, and for me, this is it. So we want to look forward to 2011 and many more banks making use of BPO in the live commercial environment, leading eventually to ICC endorsement. So that's my insight, if I may. On resources, very quickly, I've actually got two, but I'll do them very quickly. At SWIFT, we put out a newsletter called Supply Chain on SWIFT. We do that three times a year. It goes out electronically, and also a copy is available for physical distribution. Next one going out in January. If you're not on the mailing list, you can just drop me an email, david.henner@swift.com, and I will ensure that you get a copy. And another one that I just want to refer to very quickly. Also during CyBOS, there was a report published by a Dutch business consultancy called Zanders on working capital management. And that report contains a detailed analysis on the cash conversion cycle today compared to pre-crisis, with results broken down by industry sector and by geography. I think it's quite an interesting read, and that report is available for distribution by emailing update@zanders, that's Z-A-N-D-E-R-S, .eu. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, David. Eric, one resource and one insight, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me pose an insight slash thought here, and we've talked about collaboration, as David already mentioned, and oftentimes we look at collaboration between the parties involved in structuring the transactions. I think we need to take that one step further in terms of also collaboration on our experience on risk-taking. We all are aware that trade assets are mostly much better assets than straightforward lending assets, and I think I think not always all the banks have the right statistics to actually demonstrate that for themselves. If there were a higher ground to collaborate and to compare statistics that could lead to a lower capital utilization of the trade assets, then we could all provide much more support to the SMEs and to the middle markets and to the large companies in many of the geographies that all of us are working at, leveraging the knowledge and the statistics that all of us have on a broader basis. In terms of resource, RBS produces a treasurer's guide to trade finance, which I can recommend. It provides worldwide country profiles and also ideas for structures possible and pricing possible in those countries at a certain stage. It gives a good insight in GDP, in GDP growth per industry sector in the various countries that really helps some of us to focus exactly on the business that we want to do and where we can best support our customers.
Excellent, Eric. Thank you very much. And gentlemen, I want to again thank you all very, very much for investing your time to join us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you also for listening to this inaugural podcast of Spotlight Trade Finance, Opus Advisory Services. My name is Alexander Malaket, and I thank you all very much for joining us and invite you to join us for the next podcast, which we will prepare in the coming 3 or 4 weeks. And we look forward to receiving your feedback on this discussion. And we'll be more than happy to facilitate contact with any of our panel members should you wish to do so. You can reach me through our website at www.opus-advisory.com or email me directly, ar.malaket, M-A-L-A-K-E-T, at opus-advisory.com. Ladies and gentlemen, members of the panel, thank you all very much, and have a good day.